This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. It's now 7:34 on the 20th of February, Monday. I'm Melissa Idris with Julian Ng. The latest news overnight is that Kraft Heinz has dropped its $143 billion offer for rival Unilever. Now, this was rather surprising because it comes just a little more than 48 hours after the news was made public. When it was made public, it was seen to be an audacious bid trying to combine two of the world's biggest packaged food companies.
That's right. This is about phase came about because I think there was, according to Unilever, not enough premium being paid for the stock price. What the reports point out to is that there was an 18% premium offered to Kraft and Kraft offering to Unilever, and Unilever thinks that that wasn't enough. In fact, the boss of Unilever is a consumer goods veteran. He had been with Procter & Gamble, he's been with Nestle, and he became Unilever CEO in 2009. Unilever is based in Singapore. So after that bid was made, what would have been seen to be a hostile takeover, he was frantically putting the team together in the face of the bid, hiring lawyers and financial people and things like that.
All right, so just some context. Unilever owns Ben & Jerry's ice cream, Dove soap, and also Hellmann's mayonnaise. Kraft, of course, they have a range including Philadelphia cheese and Heinz baked beans. But what is also important and what commentators are saying is that Kraft Heinz is jointly controlled by the billionaire investor Warren Buffett, also the Brazilian private equity group 3G. Now, commentary on this issue was that because 3G, that Brazilian private equity group, they have a reputation for cutting costs, now irrespective of how that might impact jobs in factories. Whereas Unilever, on the other hand, has a reputation of, say, doing the right thing in terms of corporate social responsibility and the environment, even if that eats into the bottom line. So perhaps this might not have been two cultures that would have meshed well.
Yeah, so one is cost-cutting, the other is possibly revenue expansion, that's Unilever. But it also attracts some degree of regulatory attention because, going back to the people behind Kraft, when they cut costs, they also cut staff. And when you cut staff, then this will target the kind of employment policy that's very sensitive to politicians. Mm. It's very hard to cut staff. What about antitrust sentiments? Because you're talking about the two biggest home care products and food products companies in the world would also attract some degree of regulatory sentiment. But I think Kraft wants Unilever quite badly because Unilever is a good home and personal care giant that Kraft is kind of lacking in that area.
But you know, at $143 billion, that is eye-watering levels of a bid. I mean,
it's huge.
If you take a look at some of the biggest takeover deals that have been, you know, attempted recently, we're talking about, say, look, the biggest one that I can remember was the AT&T and Time Warner. That was, what, $86 billion. So this is far exceeding that.
Yeah, also, of course, the unsolicited bid of $120 billion Pfizer made for AstraZeneca, that was way back in 2014. That did not go through because of all the issues that we talked about with, you know, the tax inversion problem, you know, trying to save tax, run away from tax in the US, pushing the home base into UK. Mm. And then also the question of firing people in the UK was not very palatable to the policymakers over there.
Yeah, we're just going to see more and more companies perhaps look to consolidate as tough times get tougher. But clearly this is not one we're going to be seeing in the future. Kraft, Heinz and Unilever is not happening. That's the latest news. Moving on to Mongolia, they have reached an initial agreement with the IMF, that's the International Monetary Fund, for a three-year program that includes $444 million of a loan package. This is all part of their $5.5 billion bailout to help Mongolia with some looming debt repayments.
So the Mongolian economy is in a little bit of a trouble because of their exposure to commodities. They have extremely high exposure. For example, over 90% of their exports come from the mining and commodities sector. And this in turn would provide a lot of revenues to the government. And when you see commodity prices crashing, as we have seen in the last 2 or 3 years, the government coffers would be in trouble as well. So this is where a lot of institutions and countries are coming to Mongolia's aid, including the IMF, including countries like China and Japan and Korea, all lining up to give Mongolia some money to give them a little bit of a helping hand.
But is that, I mean, you know, altruistic? Because again, you know, Mongolia is resource rich, right? So what, 94% of the country's exports is to do with mining and its mineral wealth. I wonder why Mongolia has not diversified its economy. I mean, we all know the risks of an economy that's just dependent on the resource sector. What happens when commodity prices take a downturn? You know, the whole economy collapses. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think diversification is a very long-term project, as we have seen here also in Malaysia, where we have a very high dependence on, for example, oil and gas, plantations and CPO and so on. Now, if there is a huge downward price in CPO, for example, would we be able to change and diversify very quickly? The answer is that it is unlikely. And if you look at the Mongolian stock market performance, it has been so volatile. It fell about 40% in 2014. 2015 alone fell 15%. And in 2016, you had swings amounting to about 20% upwards and downwards.
Wow.
So this really whiplashes both the stock market and the economy. And a lot of financial advisors, economic advisors have asked Mongolia to actually restructure the economy, and I don't think that is something that is achievable in the short term. But nevertheless, this money would come in handy to pay off some of the looming debts, about half a billion bucks that is due in March this year. Incidentally, the foreign exchange reserves of Mongolia stand at about 3.8 billion US dollars, of course, much lower than what Malaysia has. And that 3.8 billion only finances between 3 to 4 months of imports, compared to Malaysia's foreign exchange reserves financing about eight months of our imports.
All right, it's coming up to 7:42. We'll be back with a look at the local business scene, including a discussion on EPF's 5.7% dividend rate for the year 2016. We'll be back with details on that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.